podcast, Spence and Buzz sit down with friend of the show, Mike Stockton, to go over the novelties from this past week's Watches and Wonders. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. Welcome, everybody, to episode 64 of the Whiskey and Watches podcast. I think this week we're going to be reviewing some of the novelties released at Watches and Wonders last week, and we are pleased to have back with us for his third appearance as a guest, Mr. Mike Stockton from Fratello Watches. Mike, good to have you as always.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing well.
Doing great.
Yeah. And since you're here, that clearly means Spangler's not with us tonight.
It's just... You know, they say, what do they say? Third time's the charm, once, twice, three times a lady. I could go on, but clearly not. I'm sorry, guys. You're going to have to invite me back a fourth time.
Just, you know, I don't think we'll have any issues with that. And he was really upset. Tonight was actually a really unfortunate thing that happened, which we'll maybe eventually let him tell us, the guests on air or those on air. But like it was just of all things to get the text message at like 5:30 from him saying he wasn't going to be able to make it. And the reason why are just like, oh, man, like of all the things to have happen, it was so anyway, it was just kind of one of those, it wasn't meant to be. It just wasn't meant to be.
We can't say anymore, but all I can say is, yeah, it's just not meant to be is right.
Nope.
Yeah.
Just a point for those listening at home. I've never seen Mike Stockton and Spangler in the same room on the same video chat. Be a heck of a con, maybe.
It just very well could be. Yeah, you think he goes off to Louisiana for veterinary school, and perhaps he's going to Germany.
Yeah.
That's good. That's pretty good. Well, we're going to change up the order a little bit tonight, and I'm going to go ahead and lead off the wrist check and the drink check. So in the glass, since Spangler can't be here with us, I went with the original recommendation that led to one of my New Year's resolutions, which was to listen to Spangler more when it came to whiskey, because that's about the safest thing for me to do when it comes to listening to Spangler. So I have a Michter's Rye Manhattan. So I've got the Michter's Rye. I've got the Antica Formula Vermouth. And I went with the orange bitters tonight. And because I was too lazy to bring the maraschino cherries down, I don't have a cherry in there, but whatever. And then on my wrist, because I went down to our friends at Richter and Phillips today to check out, they actually had some of the new watches that were released last week from Tudor in the case. And then I was also able to see the new Speedmaster on a bracelet, which I had not seen yet. Hadn't made my way down there since that had been released, or since they'd gotten one in on a bracelet. Cause I think their first allocation, I think they both came in on straps. So got to try on some new stuff, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. I have on my, the OG, the Tudor Black Bay Steel, wore that one today.
Very nice.
That's what I've got. Buzzy, what have you got?
Heute trinke ich ein Bier sehr gern. Es gibt ein Madry Psychopathy. Ganz gut.
Ganz wow. Gut. Is that an IPA?
It is. It is. And I decided to not drink any beer for Lent. I wasn't completely crazy because I did allow myself two whiskeys a week. So, you know, just kind of put myself on the pitch count, if you will, overall. don't want to get that liver overworked, right? But it's done, and it's a delicious IPA.
Nice.
Zero complaints. Although, like most people, a lot of people, I think, that live here that used to go to the old Mad Tree, which was had a very small bar area relative to the shop floor that actually made the beer. It was always terrible to find a parking spot, find a place in the bar. I really miss it. It was a lot of fun just because it was crowded.
More character.
Yeah, it was just a giant pain in the butt, and it was always good, always fun. So now they've got a fancy brewery room, but good for them.
It's massive. It's massive.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
What's on the wrist, Buzzy?
Doxa sub 300 TC Rambler. Roll Ramblers, nice. Roll. Still on the beads of rice. I like it.
So you're enjoying it, huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Congrats on that pickup. That wasn't so long ago. So
thank you. Yeah. Yeah. It was fairly recent, and like the subtle finishing on the dial, little sunray. It was only when I saw Pandolfo's 300 in person that, you know, I really became convinced how good the silver dial was. But yeah.
So I own one of each of those, you know, the three original dial styles, and I just go back and forth on what I like best. I mean, I remember from the beginning, it was all about the professional, because when you thought of Doxa, you thought of orange, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the original 300 I have, the thin case one, is a Sea Rambler. And then I've got like a early 70s Shark Hunter. And I don't know, they're all, you know, some watches, like the dial variations are, yeah, they're different. But I think on a Doxa, it just really makes it a totally different watch. It's dangerous because it makes you want to own one of each. So, but the silver is just a great contrast, because there aren't that many good looking silver dive watches, especially from, you know, the era which it comes from, right?
Right. And it shows up fairly white in some lighting conditions. It's like close enough. And then other times the silver really pops. It's just funny because you have the dial, then the bezel with the brushed and the polished. There are so many surfaces that are nominally steel colored, and they all show up differently in all sorts of different lighting and angles. I believe one could say that it really plays with the light.
Well, I think it's really well said, because it's true. Some silver dial watches, everything just sort of blends together, but this, it does really have a lot of different, tonality. And of course that orange hand really adds something too.
Yeah.
So yeah, great watch.
Thanks, man.
Cool.
What
Mike,
what
I think you gotta, you're going to bring us home.
Yeah.
So I have been in the USA for a week now, and so it's great. I'm not begging you guys to drink at some obscenely early hour to accommodate my European schedule. I went whiskey shopping, because of course over here I can buy some of the things I really like without, you know, struggling. And I am drinking a George Dickel 12. So this is in the white label, and this is a 90 proof. I'm drinking it neat in a kind of a cut crystal glass. So I'm at my parents' house, so I raided the china cabinet, and I actually, because it's baseball season, I have an on-deck whiskey, and that would be the George Dickel Bottled in Bond.
Ooh.
Which is a 50 proof. Yeah, I bought the last bottle at the Total Wine in Boca Raton, which has a ridiculous selection. And yeah, it's really good. I just thought I would work my way up. So,
nice.
Yeah. And on the wrist, I am wearing the brand new, newly released 36 millimeter Rolex Explorer. I'm just joking. I'm wearing my 36 millimeter Rolex Explorer from the late 90s that looks a lot like the watch that was just released. But yeah, I brought this one over. I decided to really wear this for a month. And never really disappoints. It's great. And we'll talk, I know you guys will talk about the Rolex releases here in a bit, and how great it is that the size is back to where it should be, but it's just still a great looking watch when I look down at my wrist. So that's on my wrist. And maybe before we get to the Watches and Wonders, there's something I wanted to ask the quietest guy on the show. That would be
Which is Bugs. Not me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I've been storing this question up for a long time because, you know, I listen to you guys week in and week out. And Buzz, you do chime in with your witty comments. And, you know, you speak here and there, but this is a subject for you. When I heard about your woodworking on a past episode and how you would go down and, you know, do some woodworking and things like you talked about this place you would go and you met up with some people and things like that, I thought, finally, I've met the person who can answer this question. So we're going to go back about 20 odd years. I was getting out of school. I was moving into my apartment and I needed to go buy some things. You know, I went to Home Depot and I needed some basic tools and stuff like that. And I needed a power drill.
All right.
I needed a cordless, you know, rechargeable power drill. So I walk in, they've got Makita, they've got Milwaukee, they've got DeWalt, they've got Ryobi, their own brand. And I'm like looking at all these things and I'm thinking, all right, typical type of tool buy. You want to buy something that's complete overkill, but you know you don't need to. Mm-hmm. So the guy comes over and he's like, hey, can I help you? And I'm like, look, at the end of the day, I need some stuff to like hang up some pictures, you know, do some typical stuff around the house. And he goes, look, man, I won't lie to you. He goes, all these drills, all the motors are exactly the same. He's like, they're not, it's not like the old days and all this kind of thing. So it kind of like got me thinking recently. I don't know why this story came into my mind. It's because you're woodworking, but you know, it's like when people complain about a watch with like an ETA 7750, right? You can find them for $1,000 and you can find them for $7,000 or something like that. So Buzz, I want to know, power drill, what's the story?
Power drill recommendations. Dynamite. All right. I love woodworking. I don't get to do it enough. But
there's a joke there.
But that's
just not, we're not going to go there. I'm just saying.
All right. Well, hey, we know where your head's at, Spence. So I, for one, I just went Milwaukee. I'm not looking back. M18. It's way more than I will ever need. And I love it. You know,
any truth to the motors? I mean, the motors are not house made, I know, in-house, but there's got to be differences in the specs, the like all the different gears and things like that, right?
There absolutely is, because at the end of the day, they're all rated to different different torques or impact drivers to different impact energy. And also, you know, just because you have a motor doesn't mean the way that you drive it, is the same. So the motor control is really important. The amount that you discharge the battery packs is important for long-term, life on the batteries. Yeah. I mean, I had Ryobi for a long time, but I decided that just like Parks and Rec, I needed to have a treat yourself day, and I.
So you dumped the Daniel Wellington and you went for the Rolex of drills, is what you're saying?
Exactly. It might be more like Omega, because there's a lot of like really fancy pants Euro stuff that I don't know if it's actually any better, but it still has Osh, that kind drills, of mystique. I'm thinking Festool and Hilti and all of that. But
well, you answered my question, and I thank you for that. I can sleep well tonight, and now I guess you guys can take us into a more relevant topic. So,
well, I mean,
but thank you, Buzz.
You're welcome. I'm glad to help. I could have been anything. That could have been advice for a driller, impact driver. Could have been, planes, wood planes. I've got opinions. Got opinions for all of it.
It could be my fourth time back. I'll come with another hardware question.
There we go. I like it. The Whiskey and Woodworking podcast.
Yeah. Well, speaking of woodworking, Audemars Piguet released a watch this week.
Yeah.
Nice segue.
You know, it had to be done.
I will just point out that I never knew, because even if you're at the top of the watch game, you're always going to have some aspirational peers, right? People that one thing or another, maybe they do certain things better than you do. So, kind of people that you want to live up to. I didn't understand, though, that their aspirational peers were the Invicta Joker watch line.
Yeah, it's come full circle a bit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just everything from the whole, press conference release, the outfit the CEO was wearing, and just the watch it's terrible. I mean, I try to sugarcoat things, but it's terrible. And you know, I grew up really liking comic books. I mean, I still kind of like them. I dig the Marvel movies. They're fun. But this is just, I don't know. I've been here in South Florida for a week, and I've seen just ridiculousness driving around. The cars are like I've never seen before. Corona is an amazing thing because there are people who are obviously having a tough time now, and there are clearly people who are not. And I almost feel like if you're going to make something so ridiculously awful, now's the time, because people seem to be buying everything. It's unbelievable, though.
I mean, when they announced that they were taking over, or they had a Marvel relationship, I was like, this is interesting, because I don't think of high-end Swiss watches and cartoon characters. I mean, I know that there's the Omega Snoopy and the history there, but the history there, that award came from NASA. Like, that wasn't a thing that they decided to do originally. It was to commemorate, the Silver Snoopy Award from that. Like, that was, so that one I get, but like, I don't think AP needed them. Like, it seems so odd. And then the way they executed it, I was like, okay, come up with a really crazy new alloy, make the watch out of that. Vibranium is not a real thing, obviously, but like, and even the color scheme, like, I kind of like the Zenith Defy Ultraviolet. That was a cool looking watch. This kind of could have had echoes of that if you did something like that. I mean, yes, it was going to be obscenely expensive with the tourbillon in it and the concept version, but like, there were ways to do it that weren't as on the nose as they did it. And again, I don't know if the nose is the right, thing to talk about there, but it's just like, it just seems like such a weird thing to do. I don't get it. Like, I don't even mind, like, if you take the character off of the dial and put like another crazy AP concept dial on there, I'd be like, it's a cool, like, it's clearly not for me, but like, it's a cool watch. Like, if you like the color scheme, if you're the owner of the Sacramento Kings, this is the watch for you. But like, to put,
or the Ravens, right?
Yeah. Or the Ravens, like any, like, but like, to put the character like that much on the dial, I don't.
Yeah. And it's here's the thing too. When you read articles about it, that, people will point out that how well, they sculpted, Black Panther right on that dial, how well it was pulled off. And I am certain that the design was implemented with a high degree of artistry and skill, but it doesn't make the cognitive dissonance of having a watch that costs more than most people's car be plastered with a cartoon Yeah, there's one of these things is inherently serious, and one of these things is inherently not that serious because it's kind of for everyone, right?
So playing devil's advocate here, okay? You guys have all seen these like erotic watches that get released every year by different brands. And I mean, okay, I know historically these things existed and that's sort of why they're here, but that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I clearly don't belong to those private clubs where, you know, I wear a tuxedo and would wear such watches, I guess. But, you know, on the one hand, this kind of isn't any more ridiculous than that. But, you know, coming back to the comic book character thing, I was thinking about it. And oddly, you know, when I would do This Week in Watches on Fratello, I feel like it was last year and maybe a bit in 19. Do you guys remember, I think they're Romain Jerome RJ watches. So they made watches like 5 or 10 years ago with like pieces of the Titanic on it. And they would do these like crazy expensive watches that had like stuff, you know, from some historical site or something. And these like artifact watches. Well, they changed their name from Romain Jerome to RJ watches, which I always have a fun time with Robert John on. Yeah. But they picked up both like DC and Marvel characters. And like last year they were selling these watches. They were like between 15 and 25,000. And they were kind of like, they were kind of fun actually. I think you could get them for a heck of a deal when they filed for bankruptcy, but they're gone. And I guess AP picked that up. Although for all I know, you know, Marvel could be outselling character by character to different companies. I don't know how they do this, but yeah, it was a surprise and not really a great one, frankly.
I mean, I get that it's, and I don't like to, like, I don't like lambasting things.
I'm with you.
Like, it's clearly for somebody. I think it's a very select audience that this watch is for, but I mean, most of the AP concept stuff is for a select audience. So that's just fine. And yes, like to Buzzy's point, it's executed for all intents and purposes amazingly well. There are just a few design choices or at least a few rendering choices of the things you've seen. You're like, maybe don't align your logo on the tourbillon that way so that it looks like it's just phallic. Or maybe,
yeah,
exactly. Or maybe just do the face of the character on the watch. Like, right. Don't like, just, there's so many other things you're like, did nobody look at that? I don't want to say that did nobody look at that, because it's just like, should, or maybe that's the joke. Maybe this is one of the erotic watches kind of, maybe it is. I don't know. It's just, it's one of those weird things where you're just like, did nobody think how this was going to look? I don't know. I mean, like I said, the watch in and of itself, like I find that case shape actually really interesting. Mm-hmm. The one that they did last year, with the dial, like the deep pool dial, like that was unbelievable. Like they pull off some amazing stuff. And I'm sure in person, like Buzz said, the dial work for the character for Black Panther is probably unbelievable. And, you know, I'm sure it, as we all like to say, probably plays with the light amazingly in the sunlight. It's just, it was one of those things where you're like, I didn't realize AP felt they needed to do this. It's just different. I mean, but that's, they decided to do it. I'm sure it's executed very well in person. It's just, you're just, it's one of those things you're like, it's just kind of a bit of a head scratcher.
Well, you have to wonder what the designers were thinking. Like on that day, they all arrive at like 8:30 in the morning and they're sitting in the conference room and it's like, okay guys, big news here. Here's what we're going to work on. And you're like, huh? What? Run? Really? Oh yeah. Interesting release. So I don't know, maybe we can move on to something a bit more
mainstream,
relatable.
You know what wasn't a head scratcher? The Explorer going back to 36 millimeters of glory.
I'm with you, but you know, leave it up to Rolex to give you exactly what you're not thinking they're going to give you, right? Because, you know, they made the Submariner a little bit bigger. They released an Explorer 2 that didn't change at all in size. They, you know, they when last year with the Oyster Perpetuals, didn't they like cancel some sizes out and certain colors and things or case sizes? It's just like, so it was a weird move. We can talk about two-tone in a second. I mean, I'm very pleased, obviously. I never really liked the 39 millimeter. I always thought the first one with the short hands was goofy. The second one was okay, but this watch I think just looks great in 36 millimeters. And I'm happy for, I think the fact that it's 36 millimeters should mean that it will also be more available. I actually do think that this size choice will make it less of a, you know, less of a hot commodity. You know, the Air King is, for example, you can get them. Yeah. Okay. For good reason, in my view, but I actually do think this will make it more available. And, you know, I hope people try it on and realize that the size actually isn't a demerit, but, nice updates, technically, things like that. I'm very happy. The two-tone one, oof, I'm all over the shop with my thoughts on that, really. I think it's a bit gimmicky. I think we all wanted a white dial version instead in steel.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. but like I said, you never get exactly what you want with Rolex, do you?
I will say, favorite thing about the two-tone was our buddy Brodinky's little meme about it. And RJ's response to that, because to me, this goes in the way back machine. I remember, I think it was the second episode of Fratello Radio where you said that some of the listeners asked you to ask RJ to say, "I love gold."
Yeah. Or no, it was, I asked him to say smoke and a pancake.
Yeah, that was,
but I think it was shame on wrist, or horological dictionary. One of those two accounts, like when the gold, moonshine Speedmaster came out, they put a picture of him up there of gold member and said, RJ Brewer having his greatest day or something. Yeah.
The best part about it was I got the screenshot from Bro and he's like, "Look at this." And it was RJ's comment pinned to the top. It's like, "I know a guy." Yeah. It was amazing. Just the juxtaposition of that. And I was like, "Oh, I can remember mowing the lawn listening to that." And I literally I had a line that was crooked because I was laughing so hard when you had him do that. And the fact that he either hadn't seen the movie or didn't quite get the reference, I was like, that makes it even funnier. But that was, the two-tone is interesting. I want to see it in person. I'm not saying that it's for me by any means, but I kind of reserve judgment because like we said, the 36 is amazing. I got to try one on our buddy who I ran into at RMP today, at Motor John, who I know is listening, or will be when this gets released. He had one and he wore it over the summer when he came to check out. We just kind of had a meetup cause he doesn't live too far away from me. And that the 36 millimeter, it's perfect. It's the perfect size
because it's a 20 millimeter bracelet and with a very small bezel because there's nothing going on there. The dial size is big, relatively speaking. That's why it shows up on your wrist really nicely.
Yeah, and I think I think one of the meme accounts joked about, you know, the Explorer being sort of the second cheapest Rolex out there, and it's such a boring watch and all this, and I laugh. It is kind of funny, and especially in today's world, there's really not much of a difference between it and the Oyster Perpetual, for example. I guess the bracelet's probably a little better or whatever, but maybe case finishing. But what I always liked about it, and I think what a lot of people liked about this watch is that, at least 20 years ago, is that this was sort of the watch you liked if you didn't want a flashy Rolex and you just wanted a good looking watch. I mean, I had friends who vehemently opposed Rolex and Some of these friends like wore massive Panerais and everything, and they were always like, I want an Explorer. So it somehow appeals to it sort of cuts across, you know. It's I'm like I say, I'm just really glad they brought back the right size, because I think that's where it belongs. So we'll see. I had a chuckle at the prices on Chrono 24 immediately of all the 39 millimeter Explorers. I mean, it's just it's laughable what people are now going to try to get away with. But yeah, buy the 36. That's my opinion.
I think it's really interesting that you brought up the context of this move, that previously they upped the size of the sub and then really did a whole hell of a lot to the Oyster Perpetual line. They axed the 39, which in a lot of ways was like incredibly choice. And I'm saying this as someone that likes 36. The dials that they had on the 39 and the sizing was really good, but they killed that. They killed the blue Arabic dial, Oyster Perpetual. So they really, at the time, those all seemed like really bad moves. You know, really, because I was interested in the blue Arabic dial. I thought it was great. But now I see that probably was actually just getting the lineup prepared and rationalized for right sizing the Explorer 1. So then now you don't have that overlap anymore. I also, good on them for decreasing the price. Good on them for doing that, because
well, it's less steel, Buzz. Yeah. I mean, that makes a big difference.
Yeah. Oh yeah, exactly. those direct material costs agreed.
Yeah. Now, the one I have is the 14270, and my dad has the model after this, which was still 36 millimeters, and they switched that to the solid end link. So mine is the stamped, which I know you guys don't necessarily love, but I love. And the big difference being is that, you know, the end links, once you move to solid, stick out that center end link. Mm-hmm. And it basically, you know, gives a bigger lug to lug, even though it drapes downward. And of course this watch has that, this new 36, but it's interesting that Rolex sticks with that. Whereas Omega, by the way, like you saw the new Speedmaster, has now gone to bracelets that actually come vertically. So the end links are totally different than the last Speedmaster. So it's funny the way that these companies are sort of trying to figure out, okay, we make a smaller watch, but we give it these end links to make it look bigger. And yet you have Omega going, okay, we keep the Speedmaster the historic size, but we're going to make it feel smaller because of the bracelet. You just got to wonder what kind of studies these guys do and what kind of things they're looking at to try to make these decisions. But interesting stuff, I guess, that very few people actually think about. Oh, except for us dorks.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing about it was, is I actually, one of the two of the watches I tried on today was a old Sapphire Sandwich with the old bracelet, and a new Hessellite on that new tapered bracelet. And that bracelet makes all the difference. I mean, say what you will, there's the step dial, there's a few little subtle things. But to the uninitiated, looking at the dial of the old one and the new one, you're not going to know much of a difference. Yeah. Like they're both matte dial. Like I said, very subtle differences, but the bracelet, it makes all the difference. That new bracelet that they just came out with is absolutely killer. And the taper, the way it drapes over the wrist, it's insanely comfortable. And it just, I don't want to say it gives it almost like a vintagey feel, but like that's such a timeless watch. It feels much more of the appropriate era for how they did that, which is just, it's really impressive. And I know that one came out back in January, which I love the fact that they release a lot of their new Speedies on the first Speedy Tuesday of every year. At least they've done that now 2 years ago. That is so cool. That is such a nod to the little community, the enthusiast. It's not a little community by any means, but like the enthusiast community that was started with Speedy Tuesday and with Fratello. It's just really cool that Omega recognizes it. Right? Yeah. They're like, hey, we're just going to do this. Like the first, there's going to be a first Speedy of the year and it's going to come on Tuesday. It's just so cool.
No, it is cool. You're right. And it's always nice to start off the new year with something fresh from them. Right. Especially
when you're
thinking about going back to work and everything. You're like, oh, well, got this to look forward to reading pleasure. So,
Before we move on from Rolex, can we talk about their interesting choices on the date just?
Sure.
So they did a couple of things that came out. One was the Tommy Bahama dial,
right?
The palm frond, which was so
I think pretty I will cool, say this actually.
It's neat. It's not for me, and that's fine. But somebody showed me a picture of that with the fluted bezel on a Jubilee, and that's way better than the smooth bezel on an Oyster. So I don't know why they kept promoting that one. And I get that it's because the dial becomes the focus, but like the dial makes more sense on the fluted bezel Jubilee in my brain. So like it looks better. I love the brick dial though. Those kind of textured bricks. That's gorgeous. That is like the sleeper hit to me.
Totally with you. I think, it reminds me, I don't know when it was that Rolex was doing stuff like that. I feel like 20, 30 years ago, they were doing some really cool textures. And yeah, I'm with you. I saw that and I'm like, ooh, I was like, had this been at Basel, that's probably where I would have stopped and spent the most time, you know, at the display. They do some neat dials and, you know, the Datejust it's just one of those watches. I feel like it's always there, you know, and just the number of combinations you can make out of it. Incredible. But I'm definitely team Jubilee on the Datejust.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
The only DJ for me is American Psycho era 80s. Catch me at Dorsia. They've got great sea urchin ceviche. One of these days I will own one of those.
You should. I mean, and the good thing is like you can find them for a reasonable price and you can always get rid of it too if you don't like it.
Right.
That was what the salesperson was wearing when I went into an AD down here, and his Datejust, my Explorer, and the three gaudy bejeweled gold pieces were the only five Rolexes that I saw in the store. I'm sure there were some behind, but unbelievable, guys. Three showcases and three watches. It was insane.
Yep. It's nuts. But we can talk about the sister company.
Yes.
Yes.
That actually had new models in the store in Cincinnati. I was like 4 days late seeing them. So they hadn't, I mean, not that they hadn't sold. I feel like they'll go pretty quickly. But I saw two of the new Tudor releases that came like late last week after they were announced. Like I saw the Tudor Black Bay 58925, the new silver version on the leather strap, and the Black Bay Chrono, the black with the white subdials. They didn't have the white one in yet, but they had the black with the white subdials. Both really good pieces. I mean, the 58 in silver is kind of an interesting choice. I mean, obviously the 58 in gold, again, for 16.8, another really interesting way to go. But we all agree the 58 wears really well. It's a great sized watch. And the gray dial, like the gray dial is great in person. I know they're calling it a taupe. It's a gray, like it's a sandy gray. It's a really attractive watch. Would have been cool with a red pip though.
You know, I'm intrigued by that watch to the extent that I, as of today, that's my kind of, at least the watch that I'm leaning most towards potentially buying of what was released at Watches and Wonders. I like different metals and, you know, silver cases, I feel like were a thing about 100 years ago. And, you just don't see them. And I mean, for a lot of reason, right? And I'm going to be very curious to see how this material holds up and everything from scratching to oxidation. And, you know, when I was in that boutique, which, by the way, they did manage to have every flavor of GMT and Black Bay 58 in the case, which was interesting. So blue, black, whatever. But they, you know, we were talking and he goes, I'm really curious to see, because people will be taking this in the swimming pool and the hot tub, and chlorine and silver don't party so well together. And, you know, then the ocean and things like that. I'm very curious as to what they alloyed with this with and how it's going to work. But I applaud the choice. It's funky. It's different. Like we were talking about before the show, it's an eccentric piece. I think that sitting next to a steel bracelet, Black Bay Blue or the Black Dial, I think it will be a tough sell, actually. It's more expensive. It's a weird metal, and but I like it. I think it's cool. I think it's neat.
The thing that they did to help themselves out there was, it is more expensive, but it's at least in the same conversation versus the gold. So that's going to help. I agree. I am fascinated to see if it tarnishes, because even though they are saying, oh, it's not going to, another part of me thinks, well, if you're certain of
metallurgy at some point, right?
Well, yeah. But if you're certain of that, why did you go with the display case back to display a movement that's not that pretty looking? And why is it on a strap?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, do you think a sterling silver bracelet would work?
I don't have any clue as to the material specs.
I don't think it would have the kind of, wouldn't have the kind of, like I have a sterling silver money clip, for example, and it opens right up, you know, there's no real normal force to it. So maybe they would have had to use like a steel clasp or something. I don't know, but, what I do like is that they didn't go with any Fotina on it. And, it's a nice looking watch. It's really nice. So sorry, shifting gears. I have to ask about the gold one. So
you didn't have it. I didn't see it,
but I got to ask your opinion. So I've got an article coming out. Well, by the time this comes out, it will have gone out, but the article's titled, "Would you really pay nearly $17,000 for a Tudor?" That's the question. And I make the argument in there that, okay, they've always been the less expensive alternative to Rolex, right? But they never mention Rolex, but we all compare it. And okay, a gold Submariner is like $37,000. Okay, it's on a bracelet. So
gold yacht certainly still in the 20s though, and that's on an Oyster Flex.
That's a fair point. That's a very fair
that
point.
That got brought up today at Richter and Phillips. It was, you know, the 40 millimeter gold Yachtmaster is low 20s.
And that's I have to tell you, I'm embarrassed to say I love that watch.
Dude, some of those, like with the black bezel, they're so good. Like the white gold one is to me, the rose gold.
The rose gold
with the black bezel. It's so good.
I think it's the favorite watch that they make right now for me, which is okay. This 36 millimeter Explorer is great, but it's my favorite watch they make right now.
It's a good one.
Yeah. But it's so, you know, they're really, to me, they're kind of like, they're saying, hey, Breitling, hey, IWC, hey, whatever. We're not going to just make $5,000 and below watches anymore. We're going to start trying to steal your lunch a little bit here. So I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you think it'll sell well because it's got the Rolex family behind it?
So I'm of multiple minds on this one, because you can see the higher price point as a shot over the bow, but also nobody thinks that Doxa is competing with AP because they released that 80 grand solid gold sub.
Fair enough.
That being said, we're nominally in Steel Sports Rolexes very starved for product. And there is enough of a leap when you start going to the precious metal Rolexes that maybe there's a buyer that will go for this Black Bay gold instead. Call it the it's gold nice looking. Bay. Call it the gold bay. That's my feedback.
The gold bond gold bay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would, if I bought 17 grand, if I spent 17 grand on Tudor, it would be several Tudors over just the one.
Or would you just buy a used President? I don't know, but
I was very upset 2 years ago. They had a used President in the case during the Whiskey and Watches event down at Richter Phillips.
We both tried that on. It was
so good.
But Spence, you were going to say something.
Well, so I'm kind of two. And what got brought up today with, I'll give him shout outs again, at Motor John. I think he's got he doesn't have any numbers. And then at Normal Sinus Rhythm. Dustin's been a guest on the podcast. He was there today too. The point that Dustin made was, where is it priced relative to other gold watches? You know, where's that new Omega bronze gold is what, like 12 and change, but I know that there's it's a bronze alloy with gold mixed in. I think it's like 38, 40% gold in that
9K,
one.
9K. Yeah. So yeah.
And I guess, you have the gold Seamaster 300 or the gold SMP that you can get, I think.
Much more expensive.
Right. But can't you also get it on rubber? That's a little bit, still roughly the same or more than that Tudor. You know, we were talking about the Yachtmaster in the low 20s. You know, if you're looking for a gold cased watch, it's still a relative value at 16.8, which sounds insane to say. It's got the in-house movement, so it's not like you're paying 16K for an ETA by any means. I think, to me, the hardest thing that they're going to have to sell is the fact that they chose to go green with a dial and bezel. I mean, I still think it'll sell. I obviously don't think they're going to make it. I don't want to say that it's going to be rare by any means, but it's not going to be like a flagship. They're clearly going to still be stocking a ton of Black Bay 58s, Black Bay 58 Navy Blues, the regular Black Bay line, and the Black Bay GMT. Like, those are going to be the sellers. But you'll probably see a good number of these come in and go out to the right person. I think the green is the hardest choice there. I know everything's going green and that's the color right now, but I think if it was a blue watch or essentially the Black Bay 58 with gilt in a gold case, I think it would have sold even better. Yes, it's pricey as a Tudor, but we've seen vintage Tudor subs well north of 10.
Yeah, and that's a point I was going to make in that article. I can't remember if I did, but what do you think about the brushed case sides? Because that got some flack, basically like, hey, guys, it kind of looks bronze. You know, it looks like it looks like the Black Bay bronze a bit, you know, and I would say the brush case sides, okay, it further differentiates it from Rolex. But what do you think about that?
I think it's less of a big deal on the 58 because they're thinner. But like, honestly, my biggest complaint on the watch I'm wearing right now, not the biggest complaint, but like, I would love for that to be brushed because it wouldn't show nearly as many of the hairline scratches. Like, say what you will, it's made of precious metal, but it's a dive watch. It's got 200 meters of water resistance. It's a tool watch. It should wear better. It should have more brushing than polishing. Does it look a little bit like the bronze? I guess maybe, but none of us have seen it in person yet. So
you think they come out with like a bracelet at some point for 10 grand more?
I think that's a bridge too far.
Seems like a bridge too far. That was actually the exact phrase that popped into my mind.
Because they did it with the two-tone chrono. They did the capped bracelet with a, like, I can see a two-tone bracelet if it was like a steel and gold case. I don't think they're going to go full gold. I don't think they can.
Yeah. It is funny that, okay, green is so hot right now, as the Zoolander meme goes. It's also obviously Rolex's color. Also, this one is a different tone, but it scratches a little bit of that hard to get Harrods Black Bay
edition.
Itch. Even though they're different greens, I'm not saying they're the same greens. It still is a little bit of that thing that you just can't get in most of the world. So something like this is never going to be a volume play anyway. They'll sell every one that they make.
It's neat. It was a cool release, kind of out of left field. I like it. I mean, I'd be very, very interested to see how it does. Very interested. So
the Chrono, I will say this briefly before we move on, because I know we got to keep moving, but they managed to make it thinner. It definitely felt thinner. I wore my Tudor, the Black Bay Steel, in today specifically because the thing that I've learned about trying on watches with a 7-inch wrist is that obviously the bracelets are going to be massive and they don't always drape well when you're trying them on. So you do the whole little pinch move to try to see how it would actually feel, but you don't ever really get the feel for it on. So I put it on and then I like held it down and I was like, it wore thinner than this time only or time and date watch. They did a good job of thinning out the case. It's still a dive chrono. It's still got 200 meters of water resistance. It's big, but it works. I mean, and I've seen people saying, oh, I like the white dial better. The snowflake hands pop on that black dial. I think the white hands on the white dial will be a little bit
lost a little bit.
I mean, it's still like, don't get me wrong. I still like the white dial with the black sub dials, but to me, the black one is pretty slick. It wore well. I still kind of laugh at the whole idea of, unless you're making a military watch, screw down pushers. I get why you do them, but like, I'm never using the Chrono then. That was it. But I mean, it wore really well. It's a really impressive piece in person.
Yeah. I would have to see both of those colorways in person because even though I fully acknowledge that the legibility is going to be way worse on the white dial, for some reason that just draws me a lot more than the black dial does. But you'd need to see it in person to understand whether those fears are just like completely unfounded or maybe it is kind of a pain to read.
Well, regardless, I think it's definitely a more legible, both are just better looking watches than the prior. And the hands are thinner, correct?
They seemed a little bit like it. The other thing I like too on this one that I didn't really realize as much, and oddly enough, like I joke, I love the steel bezel on this. It just like it makes it wear a little bit smaller because it's not a contrasting color. It kind of blends into the case and shrinks the dial a bit. The black aluminum bezel insert that they have on this kind of does the same thing. Like it blends into the dial in a way that the steel bezel on the original one didn't. The steel one with the color matching, like the sub dials got lost to me on the original, like because it was all the same color. Trying to look at the Chrono on the original, like it didn't quite foot for me. Like the sub dials got lost because they had the silver hands on the stainless steel watch. It didn't quite work. It was a lot of just the same. Whereas this with the Panda or the reverse Panda with the black bezel, the Chrono function is very obvious. Whereas on the other one, it was kind of washed in, I guess. I don't know. The bezel works as well. It's a very well executed piece.
So I own a Heritage Chrono. The one that came out like 10 years ago, you know.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
And they weren't even in the States then. And I mean, when this watch debuted, I was just like, it was all that was in my mind, you know? And I went over to Europe for a work trip, and I happened to stop in Lake Como. I was in Switzerland, and we crossed the border, and I went to this dealer, and we called them, and they're like, yeah, we've got one. And I mean, they negotiated all this great stuff, and I bought it, and I never wear that watch. It's kind of big and chunky, and but I should. It's just interesting that they have not touched that watch at all. They came out with a blue one, you know, remember, a few years later, and they haven't touched it in years. Does anybody buy those? I mean, they're great looking, but
oddly enough, yes.
Okay. Well, I know you have one, but
yeah,
you have the ceramic, but
well, yeah, you know, somebody fast rider. One. Yeah. Yeah. No, Zach, our buddy from Cincy Strapco, just picked up the blue version.
Cool.
And he did, he modded it a little bit. He put a Cyclops on it because he's like, they should have done this. So I get that. But I actually really like those watches as well. They're a little bit big and chunky, like you said, but like I really like them as well. They haven't touched that. The other one, and I kind of thought that maybe this was going to be the release. They haven't touched the Pelagos since 2017 when they came out with the left-hand drive version. Mm-hmm. And you know, they kind of tease that red and black merging. I was like, hey, maybe we're getting a red Pelagos, which isn't a Coke GMT, but like a red Pelagos. I don't think anybody's really complaining that much because everybody loves the Pelagos.
Now, so how about a gold Pelagos on rubber?
That would be cool. Actually, that would be such a flex. And the funniest thing there is that since it's already in somewhat of an exotic material, titanium, not necessarily due to value, although our ability to produce way more of it than the Soviets did was a pretty handy thing in the Cold War. So it was valuable from a geostrategic standpoint. I actually think that would be incredible in a lot of ways, but they've had so much momentum with the Black Bay that I don't see them, you know, doing their first gold piece in that.
I would love a titanium case, but with like a gold or rose gold bezel, kind of a la like the tantalum version of the Seamaster 300 Professional.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that, like on the Pelagos with titanium, do a titanium and gold would be pretty neat. Like, I would love to see that. I don't think they will, but like, that would be cool. Don't do it on a bracelet. Yeah. Do it on rubber.
Next year's gotta be the year. And I think maybe you'll get your Coke next year, and maybe we'll get like a brown dialed root beer GMT.
Oh yeah.
Seems like a pretty easy play to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
yeah.
All right, gang.
We should probably move on to fun. Should we move on to fun? Oh, you got one more thing, Buzzy.
Okay, this is actually where I'm thinking that we should move on to. We have a final topic that we need to discuss. There's some other cool stuff. I'm thinking one sentence per person. This is the speed round, everyone.
Whoa.
Okay.
Whoa.
Speed round. Okay.
It's okay because I think I know who we're talking about, and we're hoping to have them back on here in the next couple of weeks to month.
Yes, the first player of the first topic in the speed round is Oris's release.
Can it be a compound complex sentence?
Go for it. You've been with the Germans long enough; you know how to pull that off.
So Oris, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good now.
Cotton candy, just. Super fun, big surprise. Oris doing what they do best, which is color.
I like it.
I will agree. The cotton candy is a ton of fun. And the thing I like about it is I'm trying to figure out whether or not that bracelet would go well on the Fratelloris. And this is going to be a run-on compound sentence. The other two releases were fun. The moon phase was a new way to do it. And Oris doing Oris with the professional diver that is way too big for daily wear, but had a really cool dial pattern. And for those of us who actually dive, our buddy Sol, I could see he's got the regulator version. I could see him eventually wearing one of these. I like it. They had a great release.
That was like a paragraph.
That was a hell of a run-on
sentence. You know, it was
a hell of a run-on sentence. And you're making it longer now.
I didn't stop. Buzzy, what have you got?
The best part about the cotton candy beside the actual product is the fact that it is priced appropriately. It is whimsical. It's at a price where it's enough that they can give you a good product for what you're paying, but you're not paying an absurd amount for said whimsy. Next topic. Next topic on the speed round. IWC, big pilot, but it's smaller than the big pilot normally is. Go.
Yeah. Big pilot 43. Mm-hmm. Not bad. Pretty clean looking. Still a bit pricey at $8,400.
For IWC, smaller is the new big, but it's still decent sized.
I would love to wear it. And then when I looked up the pricing, I thought, holy cow, I could have a Laco Flieger for every day of the week and still have money left over. I will never figure out their pricing. That was a semicolon in there. That wasn't a period between those.
I don't disagree. I've tried them on. I've tried other IWCs on. I like them. I think they're a good quality piece. It's the same thing with some of the stuff from our closing topic that we'll get to in a second. It's just like they're so close to being priced right, but just enough that you're like, I don't know if I get like, you look at other things that are there, and I guess just that doesn't speak to me as much, but I love the 43 millimeter big pilot, and I like that they took the chrono from 43 to 41. Like they're beautiful, and you get a lot for that with the new bracelet system.
Yeah, I agree. And since Spence didn't follow the rules of the speed round, he sits out on the next topic, which is the new Ming.
So Ming 17.09.
That's right.
The last of the 17 series featuring a jump hour hand modification.
Ooh.
Quick time setting, kind of like the Omega 300M. And I'm getting a blue one. They came out with a burgundy one as well.
Sweet.
I couldn't say no. 38 millimeter steel, 1950 Swiss francs, three opportunities to buy it. Trying to address some of those issues, and yeah, it's more than one sentence, but I really like them. So
I appreciate that they're doing the opportunities. That's nice, because
it's like big criticism.
Yeah. Does the bracelet that you bought for your diver fit on that too? It's called the Universal Bracelet. It should fit, right?
It will. Yeah.
Okay.
Will.
Nice.
Okay. They're beautiful. I would probably go burgundy, even though that's becoming a thing for me. And notice how Buzz could
like
keep me.
He's like Bobby Valentine. He got kicked out of the game, and he comes like running back in from the clubhouse.
The funny thing is, on the software that we use, we can only mute our own mics, not others' mics.
And because I'm the one who has a subscription, I can stop it whenever I want.
Ouch.
Our banter is too valuable for you to stop this.
Right. I try not to. Sometimes my internet disagrees, though.
I agree. We've been there. Okay. Panerai. Yeah. Panerai, Luminor, Internet Explorer. Go. I mean, E-Steel. Sorry, I got confused.
Panerai... I have such a soft spot, and I really like their watches. I really do. Also expensive, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the E-Steel branding on the dial. I think it looks almost like some sort of a giveaway. I wish they'd just done it on the back, but I realized that unless something were on the front, it would look like steel. But they also came out with this lab submersible that looked pretty epic as well. I don't know. Solid releases. I've got a lot of time for Panerai, and one day, maybe, I'll buy another one.
Yeah, I would love a Panerai, but that branding on the logo is easily their worst design choice since their bracelet.
Oh, hot take.
I will say something really quick, even though these were a bit of a blind spot for me. maybe they're listening. Maybe they should listen. I don't know if anybody remembers. We went on a rant about bracelet choices for Rolex. What did we get this year that we didn't talk about? Bracelet choices on the GMT Master 2. You're welcome. They didn't listen. It's not because of us, but maybe it was, but it probably definitely most certainly wasn't.
By the way, on that front, it is nice to know that next time you go into your Rolex AD and when those steel GMTs are in the showcase, you can say, can I try on both the Oyster and the Jubilee? I will choose one. Thank you very much. Please wrap it up. Size it for me here today. See you later.
So I've got a theory on what they're doing in the long run that's not for air or for public consumption, but when we stop recording, you're going to hear my theory.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, so actually real quick though, before we move on to, are we on our final topic, Buzzy? Shout out to our buddy Watch Salis at Watch Salis, because he was the one who told me, yeah, back in the day, 20 years ago when I was buying these, you could pick your bracelet, you could pick your bezel, you could pick your hour hand, like just... He was the one who inspired that entire rant. Like, if you want it on an Oyster, you can have it on an Oyster. If you want it on a Jubilee, you can have it on a Jubilee. And then they decided, no, you can't. And now they're deciding maybe you can. We'll see.
Theoretically.
But you can't.
But you're right. You can't, because they don't exist.
Hi. We'll we just got in GMT Batman. Oh, great. It's on the Jubilee. But I wanted Oyster. Well... back to the end of the line for you, sir.
That's right. So the funny thing is, to save on shipping, they're actually just going to ship the watch heads, smaller cases. You don't like you're going to have to wait another year and a half for the bracelet. So you can get the watch head, but you can't wear it unless you want to put it on a strap, because the bracelet you can order that you get to pick what bracelet you want. And then it's another year and a half to wait for them to give you that. Twice the choice is half the watch supply. Anyway.
All right. Before our final topic, it's not a speedrun topic. It's purely a statement. I really like the Mousse Cartier solar watch.
Yeah, it's cool. Fun.
What do those cost? I didn't look.
Two and a half, right?
Okay.
Nice.
Very
solid cool. Choice for a dress watch. Classic, timeless, and you should just be able to pick it up, right? And it should be working.
Exactly.
Should be.
Yeah. Okay. Final topic. Final countdown. Our boys at Breitling had themselves quite a show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they let off. They were not at Watches and Wonders, but they released the day before, so April 6th. And I was fortunate enough to cover the three main pieces that were released, all part of the Premier Heritage Collection. And there was a Premier Chronograph, a Duograph, and a Datura. And the regular Premier Chronograph comes with a manual wind in-house movement, chronometer certified, comes in steel with a pistachio green dial, and this 18 karat red gold with like a silver dial with matching numerals that match the case. And at 40 millimeters, this is a stunning watch. And I have to tell you guys, I tried this on quite a long time ago at a different event. And it was just magical. And I remember talking to Fred saying, like, really, are they going to do this? Like, they're really going to make a manual wind watch. And, you know, not only that, but they took that movement and they built a split seconds version, slightly larger to house that movement. But price wise, you know, these watches are all under 10,000 in steel, which, for a split seconds retroponte is pretty epic. And, I'm really, really impressed. I have to say they're gorgeous. And for those who aren't thrilled with colors or whatever, I'm sure they'll come out with additional as time goes on. But these were really the hit of the show for me, or the hit of this last week and a half. I was just blown away. I think they look like something that costs multiples more. And also, there's nobody really that makes an in-house manual wind chronograph in that realm. There's nothing else out there in a dressier form. I mean, you could take like a Speedmaster, but that's more of a sports watch, right? Right. I don't know anybody else who really makes anything in that realm. And I think they knocked it out of the park. It will be very interesting to see how they do. But I very much look forward to trying them on and the finished product now, and also hearing what you guys think.
I love Breitling. I mean, I have a absolutely nothing special Colt Chrono Super Quartz. That was my first, like, quote unquote, nice watch. And I've read plenty of Car and Driver in barbershops. So you always have the Breitling ad toward the front, because the ad for all of the, you know, fancy floor mats, that's in the middle in the back of the magazine. Yeah. They have such good product. They are trying to, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what pricing power they have, because they still just don't get the respect that they are capable of, because many in the watch community, if you will, still thinks of them as, well, yeah, they make the Navitimer, which is cool, but then they also make goofball Bentley pieces and just like
massive, yeah,
you know, bizarre stuff. So when they build things like this that are utterly gorgeous, it's going to take a while for people's expectations to kind of recalibrate. I hope that they're very successful with them, because, you know, they're gorgeous. I mean, yeah, even the color schemes are great. That pistachio, that's awesome. There's a duograph with like a steel blue dial. Mm. Stunning. I mean, I really like what they're doing. Some of the ones that before this release that you were talking up, I was at the Heritage 57, the one with radar dish.
Oh my goodness,
bezel, so stinking good. Like they're hitting home run after home run, and I really hope people actually pay attention to it and realize it and make the choice when they're in just putzing around at the AD to have their sales guy go over and take some stuff out of the Breitling case, because it'll be worth your time.
So I will say, of the releases this entire week that weren't just like a single watch, like the Ming came out, did it come out today? Came out today, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That was two watches, or the same watch in two different colors. There is something in each of the lines that Breitling released that I think is absolutely amazing. Like, and it was the only watch brand where I wasn't scratching my head on, they did this with these other things. Like, I look at their release and there's something for me in each of the lines they released. Maybe not everything is, but like, that's just a matter of personal choice on colors. Like, I want to see the pistachio in person. I'm not the biggest fan of that shade of green, but I want to see it in person. Like, it's, I'm intrigued enough to see it in person. The Salmon Dial complete calendar that they came out with is unbelievable.
Gorgeous.
It's such a good looking watch. Like, and to Buzzy's point, that Heritage Super Ocean 57, or whatever the order of those words is an amazing piece. The way that case back is smaller than the rest of the watch, the friction bezel is unbelievable. It gives friction bezels a great name, mm-hmm. which I think are kind of the unsung hero of bezels lately. To me, the way I would spec that is the new version that they came out with, the rose gold bezel with the kind of grayish pewter dial. But I would also order the bracelet with it, because that, how they did the mesh is unbelievable. Like you said, like, that is an amazing watch, especially for the price. And the interesting thing is, I know they don't get as much respect in the watch community. And I get to a degree why. However, when I go back to before I was a quote unquote member of the watch community, before I decided to go down this rabbit hole when our first was born, there were a few brands that I knew. Everybody knows Rolex. As a aficionado or fan of the James Bond series, I knew Omega, whichever Bond you came up with. I mean, I know previously they had Rolex, and I knew Rolex because Rolex sponsors everything. Like, you can't not see a Rolex ad in the United States as a human being. So those are kind of the three. So, but Breitling was one of them. You see, like Buzzy said, you see Breitling ads in the car magazines. Like when you would fly on vacation, the captain of the plane that you were flying on, there was a good chance he wore a Breitling. It was one of the, like, so whether it was a 46 millimeter Navitimer or a 42 millimeter or a Super Goliath, like what, he wore a Breitling. It's a very well-known brand. And yes, they have a very impressive back catalog that they haven't really explored until very recently. But what they came out with this year, I mean, if you go back and look, the new Navitimers they came out with in the different colors, amazing. The Super Ocean 57, the Heritage version, and even some of the newer ones, those look really good. The what's the one with the rouleau bracelet? The
Chronomat.
That's
great watch. It's a little bit big. It's a little bit big, but it's a chronograph. The salmon dial with the black sub dials.
Oh yeah.
Gorgeous watch.
Well, and I love the fact that they have the little 36 millimeter chronomats. Yes. Those things are so choice.
Oh yeah.
Not, I mean,
mint green also, which is super cool.
I know they're quote unquote ladies watches, man. Breitling. I get what you're going for there, but like, don't label that a ladies watch. Cause there's a lot of us who would wear that.
Fits me perfectly.
I've tried multiple versions of that watch on and they're all amazing. So like, not to get into that whole conversation, but like, dudes, it's such a good watch at any size. Like, let's just leave that alone. But they've had a lot of what's the one that has the, it's on, got Fred helped design that, not the new Navitimer, but the other one with the, I always blank on the model names.
Well, the 765 re-release or the,
yes, that yeah. one. I mean, all of their re-releases, they've done a very good job with the vintage inspired. They've been firing on all cylinders. And I know in the watch community, we talk and they still have to sit in the case with the completely all polished Super Galactic. And that's fine. And I get that watch isn't for us, but my guess is they still probably sell that watch.
They do. And actually the American market is the one that demands these massive pieces. And
it is,
they make some just really for here. I think like if you're a watch person, and especially like during this pandemic period, if you haven't like gone out yet, you're going to be really surprised when you go out and look in the showcase there, because they've got a really tight lineup right now. I mean, I saw one at this AD, they had Breitling. And by the way, the Breitlings were relatively picked over. Like they had been selling quite well, but to see like that Super Ocean 57 there, to see other things like this, to think like 5 years ago you were gonna see this in a Breitling case, and what we just saw released, you would never have guessed it. You know, you would have thought this will never happen. And yeah, they're making stuff that, you know, this is maybe not on the same level, but you know, for people who love cars and whine and complain that there are no manual transmission vehicles, and you know, company releases a sports car with a manual, you'd better buy it, because they're giving you something. And I think Breitling is giving people who really enjoy watches some pretty cool options.
The fun part was a bunch of us kind of impromptu got together at Richter and Phillips. This is probably 2 months ago on a Saturday. There were staggered people. Like I came in at the later end of it, and the four or five people who were there, Spangler was one of them. I was like, guys, we got to go try on the Super Ocean 57. Like we got to try it on. And everybody was speechless when they put it on. And they're like, huh, like this, like, I didn't even think that this should, huh. Like they didn't have anything to say. They were like, This is like it wears super thin. The bezel is a ton of fun. It works in a way that it, I don't want to say it shouldn't, but like you just put it on, you're like, oh,
you wouldn't think so.
Exactly. You're just like, you're just kind of stunned. You're like, this is really good. And then then you look at the price, you're like, huh, okay. This is like, it just, every single person there was like, I didn't even really like, it wasn't that they didn't like it when it came out. It was just like, you know, I never really thought to come try one of these on. And that was a mistake. And they had them in the case, and everyone was like, ooh, but can I get this one on that bracelet? And they were like, well, I mean, yeah, you could order the bracelet. Like, we can get one of those for you. And like, okay. And then everyone was like, oh, they did that rainbow dial. Could you? It's like, no, that's long sold out. That was limited edition. That's been gone. And it was funny because like retroactively, everyone was like, oh man, like that, like now that I've seen this, this is actually really cool. It was one of those where, and I think I here's the nice thing. I don't think what they just released is going to have that same effect. I think people are going to want to try these on. They're going to see there's like, yeah. Oh, those look like, I don't want to say I missed the boat with the 57 because those are still in the case. That's a serial production number. Like you can go get that and people are starting to get it. I think this, they're gonna be like, oh, I want to go see that. Like, call me when you have this in. Like, it may not be at the top of my list on what I want to get, but like, I want to see these in person.
I want to try it.
These are fantastic. Like I go back on it. And like I said, I think of the releases, they're number one. Oris was fun and they're probably right there at number two, but like Breitling, they crushed it. They did.
Yeah. No, I agree. When I got the, you know, when you see prototypes and things, it's never the same. And when I got the images, which by the way, they sent great images, like some brands sent really bad images. And, these were like, oh my gosh. I mean, you know, I don't want to overstate it and say, am I looking at a Patek or something like that? But like, they're really classy looking, you know, traditional looking chronographs that I think that anybody would be pleased to put on. Yeah, I hope they do well. And like I said, I'm sure they'll come out with some other colors and things like that, but I'm really looking forward to seeing them.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a good year. I mean, it was a good last week and a half. I thought that it was fun. You know, maybe, like I said, I mean, I think probably like you, the Breitlings are up there and I want to see that Silver Tudor, but, good releases overall. It was fun.
It was.
Agreed.
So,
yeah. I'm excited to see what hits the showcase here soon.
Absolutely. I think, and it should be in the next few weeks, we should see a lot of stuff. So yeah. Cool that you already got to see some things. So
it was pretty neat. I was impressed that they had them that fast, which we've talked about that before. Like, they did that in September with the Black Bay 58 Navy Blue. That came out really quickly. Maybe that's one of the weird side effects of this past year that like people realize, oh, there's a hype for these things. We should get them in the stores.
Get it out
before
there.
Other new things come out and people have to question, oh, that was really cool a month ago, but I haven't seen it. But then this also is really cool. So like, I don't know, maybe we'll figure some stuff out and maybe supply chains are a little bit easier to figure out right now, but
yeah.
Anyway, so I mean, Mike, it's been a pleasure having you on. Obviously, we're gonna have to have you on a fourth time so that you and Spangler can finally debunk that weird myth that was propagated by Buzz today and today only, that you and Spangler are the same person.
Look, I'm not saying.
If so, you've got us all fooled pretty damn well.
No bolo tie here. So
well, that's one of the things that you have to do to make it not so obvious. And I'm not saying that you guys are the same person. I'm just saying some people might say that you're
some people
the
same might person. Say.
Some people.
Yeah.
Some say maybe we're the good old Top Gear for a while. We're not. If anybody stuck around to the 1 hour, 24 minute mark and got that subtle dig at Scottish Watches, who we absolutely think are also great. Like just, that's hysterical.
Yeah.
Some say that he doesn't understand ducks. God, the Stig. Anyway, Mike, again, it's always a pleasure. We'll have you on a fourth time because you and Spangler have to meet at some point, which is weird to say that we've had you on three times and he's been gone all three of them. But, you know,
next time will be the time.
It will. But
well, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
It's always fun. We'll catch everybody next time. And, hopefully by then we'll all have tried on some more new watches.
See ya.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Whiskey and Watches podcast. If you like what you hear, please take the time to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. We are enthusiasts, not experts, so don't at us. But you can find us on Instagram at whiskey.and.watches.podcast. Also, visit our website at zeitzwatches.com. Zeitz is spelled Z-E-I-T-Z.